Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 185 at a happiness conference, December 5th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional. In today's show, we deviate from our regular format of interviewing a single person. Last week, I attended a four-day conference in San Francisco on happiness and its causes. The conference was sponsored by a Tibetan Buddhist organization to raise money for an initiative known as the Liberation Prison Project, which supports the spiritual practice of thousands of prisoners in the USA and Australia. While the conference was sponsored by a Buddhist organization, the roster of speakers was an amazing mix of researchers and practitioners from diverse disciplines and perspectives. You'll have already heard my interview with Dr. Philippe Golden, for example, of Stanford University, on Shrink Wrap Radio number 182, who's using fMRI technology to study both mindfulness and cognitive behavioral therapy. In part, I wanted to attend the conference to scout out other good guests to bring to you, my wonderful audience. And I'm happy to report there are a number of excellent folks who I hope to have on the show in the coming months. After 4 days of input, my head is brimming with information overload. I wish my memory were better and that I was a better note taker. I've never been a very good note taker, and this was a great drawback to me as a student. Having said this, let me give you the flavor of what managed to stick between my ears. Now it's almost a week later. There was general agreement that the sort of happiness of interest is not the transitory, smiley face, happy, happy experience, but rather a deeper, longer-lasting sense of fulfillment, such that at the end of life, one has no regrets. It was pointed out that the root of the word happiness suggests something that comes through luck or happenstance. It's clear that there are genetic differences, that we come into this world with a given temperament or disposition that is being referred to as the set point. So from that point of view, I suppose that much of it could be seen as having to do with luck. Current brain research, however, is showing that our brains are far more plastic than previously realized. We're constantly creating new neural pathways or circuits based upon what we attend to, focus on, practice. Therefore, rather than hoping to luck into happiness, it's a skill in some ways that we can work on, practice, and enhance. One of the major approaches is through the practice of mindfulness. We're wired by evolution for the extreme reactions of fight or flight. These very basic and primitive visceral responses are inappropriate for much of modern life. They evolved to help us cope in a very different environment than the one in which we find ourselves today. So mindfulness can be a way to break that reactive cycle which creates both mental anguish and stress on our internal physiology. Mindfulness practices also create the space to observe the host of self-defeating, critical, depressing, pessimistic messages which dominate much of our thinking automatically and habitually. Isolation and loneliness are potentially the most destructive of happiness. Therefore, it's important to develop and maintain family, friendship, and community ties. Happiness is a byproduct rather than something to pursue directly. To pursue one's happiness directly is to be obsessed with self. Obsession with self does not lead to fulfillment or long-term satisfaction, but devoting oneself to others or to a purpose larger than oneself does. Our preoccupation with things, money, accumulation, and busyness tends to get in the way of happiness. Simplification can help. Cultivating gratitude and forgiveness both will go a long way toward creating satisfaction. We need to open our hearts. In fact, cultivation is a good word that was used frequently. The idea of learning to cultivate these skills and to cultivate these parts of our personality that can ultimately sow the seeds for reaping happiness. Happiness is not the absence of pain or suffering. Pain and suffering are existential givens. At the same time, they're not the only thing going on in this existence. And much of our pain and suffering is transitory and dependent upon how we frame it, i.e. the story we tell ourselves about it. I've probably left some important elements out in this little overview. I'm not even sure how much of it comes from the conference at this point. I can tell you that the conference underscored that there is growing scientific support for these sorts of ideas. I can also tell you that after 4 days of input on these topics, I left in a fairly euphoric and optimistic mood. I took my little Marantz digital recorder with me. I decided not to carry along the external mic and the mic flag with its shrink wrap radio words and logo on it. I did, however, wear my shirt that has the words shrink wrap radio embroidered on it, in the hopes that any listeners in the audience would find me, and as a way of recruiting new listeners and interviewees. I didn't pursue interviews here with the major speakers, but instead got their cards and let them know that I'd be contacting them down the line. So what you'll hear next are some man-in-the-auditorium-type interviews, mostly with a random sampling of other conference attendees. I think the internal mic in the Marantz did a pretty good job, but of course you will hear a fair amount of crowd buzz in the background. I hope the following clips give you some sense of being there. Here we go. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Rita Anderholm, and I'm our resistant nurse.
Okay, and where do you do your nursing?
I do my nursing in two places. One place is that I do a school nurse in San Francisco Scott Ski School.
Okay, in the San Francisco area?
In San Francisco, yeah, in Sunset area. And the other one, I work for American Laser Center at Sutter and Scott. It's okay. Two very different kind of jobs.
I hear a nice accent. Where is it from?
This accent is from Brazil.
From Brazil. Oh, very nice. And what brings you to this happiness conference?
Talking about human feelings, it's something that really, really interests me, you know. Personally, I think, we can also, of course, bring it to the professional area, you know. And it fascinates me. I feel really, really very happy to be here.
Yes, we've heard from a lot of different speakers. And were you here yesterday too,
or is today your first time? Yeah, I was here yesterday, but only in the afternoon.
Okay, and I wonder, is there anything that sort of has really hit home for you? Any point? Anything that you've heard? Any new insight?
Yeah, there is a lot of things. I read a lot about Buddhism. I've been reading about Buddhism for a long time in my life, about five or six years. And so a lot of concepts are not new for me.
Right.
You know, I think it's very nice to see that we are getting together to talk about, one thing that is one of the most important things for the human essence. You know, it's happiness, how to get the happiness, our interconnectedness, techniques to develop techniques. I think it's very important just to develop the ability to get the happiness.
Yes. And do I hear you saying that you feel good to see that so many people come together with that interest now? Do you feel like there's something going on right now that this is an important topic?
I think we, generally speaking, I think we are living in a world that we have inverted values, you know. We are living against the real flow of life. You know? So, and we are seeing the consequences of that, you know, in the environment, in the human relationships, you know, in our high level of obesity, in our high level of diabetes, in our high consumptions of antidepressants, you know, in our high level of suicide among teenagers. So I think everything, all these things are shaking the world.
Yes.
As well as the economic crisis, as the psychological magazine was talking about.
Right.
So I think mostly, you know, I think we are feeling in our own skin the consequences of not living a life based on real values.
Well, when I first approached you, you said that you were very shy and you didn't know if you could speak, but it seems to me like you got past that.
Oh, thank you. You're generous.
Thank you.
Hi, what's your name?
Dan Foley.
Okay, Dan, what brings you to this conference?
I think primarily an interest in Buddhism and the nature of mind, and I'm a psychologist, so I'm naturally kind of attracted in that area.
Okay, are you a clinical psychologist?
I am.
Yeah. Okay, where do you practice?
Actually, in Boston.
Oh, you came all the way out for this?
No, actually, I'm here to visit some family, okay. And I tied this in with that visit.
Oh, how fortuitous.
Yeah, it was great.
So what kind of psychotherapy do you practice?
Individual psychotherapy. I'm in private practice.
Okay.
And I specialize in seeing people who actually are in religious life or contemplating entering religious life. So I do therapy individually. With these individuals, and also I do assessments.
Well, that's fascinating. How did you get into that particular line? Are you an ex-priest or something?
No, actually not. You know, the way I got into it is, after I became a clinical psychologist, I was seeing married couples, some families and individuals, and my ex-roommate from college was then a priest. And he referred me a couple people. He was in a position in the diocese, and he referred me a couple people, and it just kind of grew, and my interest grew along with it.
Okay, and are you a Buddhist practitioner yourself?
I am, yes.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you very much. Nice speaking with you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, tell us who you are.
I'm Gary Gock.
And what brings you to this conference, Happiness Conference?
Well, I just finished, I'm celebrating. I was revising The Complete Idiot's Guide to Buddhism, which comes out in June in a third edition.
In a third edition, all right. So there must be some demand for it then, if it's gone through two other editions.
Yeah, it's a bestseller, actually. It sold over 100,000 copies.
Wonderful. Yeah. That must feel very good.
I'm happy because it was sort of my idea. They didn't approach me. It took 2 years, you know, hurry up and wait. And then they finally said, yeah, let's do it.
How long ago did you publish the first edition?
2002.
Okay. Now, there are a lot of different speakers here. You're already deeply embedded in Buddhism. I wonder if you've heard any new perspectives or anything that's given what stands out.
Sapolsky was, I thought, you know, for me, just incredible. He's not only a great speaker.
Yeah.
But what he was saying about, you know, for example, the fact that you know, sort of like, it means that our evolution is at a point now where if we don't practice some kind of awareness of our emotional and mental wiring, our Darwinian structure, we're going to be unhappy because, you know, here we are. We're not an animal in the wilderness that's, you know, fight or flight or tend or befriend. But instead, you know, we have these tendencies to do things that create stress for all of our lives instead of 5 seconds. That was fantastic.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
To me, that's all about what any kind of spiritual path is about.
Yes.
You know, is going beyond where we are. It's kind of like an evolutionary sport.
Yeah. Do you find that your practice of Buddhism, in fact, has made you a happier person?
Well, you know, I think I'd say yes, but as our first speaker pointed out, Paul Ekman.
Yes.
You know, what does it mean when you say happy? And our culture in America does tend to kind of, I think, overvalue a sense that you have to be happy, happy, happy all the time, twinkle toes.
Right.
And, you know, in the sense that we hear in this conference a very nuanced and senses of what is a grounded happiness, I'd say yes. Can I give you an example?
Please.
They used a Sanskrit word which they never explained. And one was dukkha and one was sukha.
Yes.
And they figured everyone knows what dukkha is, which is suffering, and that's the teaching of the Buddha, is the nature of and the liberation from suffering. But then they mentioned sukha, which very few Buddhists understand or have heard, because it's such a vast concept that we don't have words for in English. You know, it's a linguistic kind of question.
Yeah.
If you don't have words for it, you experience it.
But it's sort of in the direction of happiness, right?
Happiness isn't even near it. Yeah. It's like a deep contentment.
Okay.
It's like really a heart-warmed bone feeling, you know, of goodness. You know, because beyond a sense of happiness or joy or any of that kind of stuff, obviously it's the reverse of, you know, dukkha, which is everything from dissatisfaction to grief. So in that, you know, in that sense, the Buddhist perspectives are kind of, you know, very unique. To answer your question in a soundbite, I'd say that, you know, my unhappiness used to be like big dinosaurs following me around and that I was running from. And now, you know, they're still there.
Yeah.
But they're sort of like the size of a shoe under the table.
Huh.
And I know they're there, and occasionally they bump me, and I know what they are. Okay, it's under the table. We've got a dinosaur. I'm human.
Great.
You know, we're born with this brain that we're not told how to use it.
Yeah.
You know, no one asked me, you know, my permission to be born. There's no user manual to be human.
Right.
So it's one of the things the Buddha was teaching.
Yeah, yeah,
you
good.
Deal with it.
Good, good.
So, yeah.
So what did you do for, or maybe still do for a living before becoming an author?
I've been a writer since I was 10.
Oh, right.
You know, I've tried other things, you know, and a day job to support it, but this is what I'm given to do.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Do you have other books in you?
Yeah, I've done 9 books.
9 books.
Yeah, but enough about me. So you like my books?
Okay, well, maybe we'll talk again.
It'll be a pleasure.
Okay, thanks a lot.
How long are you here in San Francisco for?
I live up in Sonoma County.
Oh, great.
And I'm here for the full run of the conference.
Uh-huh,
I'll be here through Wednesday.
Uh-huh. Well, enjoy your Hotel California stay.
Okay.
Thanks. Nice meeting you.
Well, what's your name? Tell us who you are.
My name is Steve.
And where are you from, Steve?
I live here in San Francisco.
Okay. What draws you to the Happiness Conference?
I'm going through a period of healing after being diagnosed with a brain tumor. And my nurse, who belongs to the center that sponsored this, introduced me to the conference. And it's very much the track I'm on right now with healing, focusing on what's ahead for me, what's my, quote, new normal.
Yes.
And how does this wake-up call in my life change my life? Because
really?
My treatment has changed my life significantly already.
Wow. In what way?
I think I've taken the time to step back and understand that work is not the only thing that validates me, and that there's a real art to giving and receiving, and that there's so much that we can give back. And so on the backside of my treatment, I'm looking forward to participating in a volunteer program and actually working with Rabina in the Project Liberation Project, which I haven't signed up for yet, but I've taken the tour, and it's a interesting point in my life. I was quite a workaholic before this happened.
I can relate to that myself. But it sounds like you're embarking on a whole new adventure now.
It's a new journey. Hopefully my treatment seems to have been successful. The tumor seems to be in remission. But whatever's left for me here is going to be different. And so whether that's a short amount of time or a long amount of time, it will be different and greatly improved and informed by conferences like this and the wonderful people I've met at the center.
Yes. Is there anything that you've heard here? And I know there's so much coming at us that it's hard to grab hold of any one thing, I find.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if there's anything that stuck with you that at some point that really got through to you.
Well, there really is, and it happened yesterday in the discussions that Rabina gave and Junpa gave, really helping us understand that things like fear and anxiety and jealousy are not part of our core beings. that really our core beings are about goodness and kindness and compassion. And it's not an unnatural thing to assume that we can, through practice and study, rid ourselves of things that are attachments and become problems for us.
Thanks so much for being willing to speak with me.
Glad to do it.
So tell me your name.
My name's Eileen.
Eileen, what brings you to this conference?
I think happiness is a great thing to learn how to become. It'd be lovely to be happy.
Yes, indeed. So what do you do in your life, if I may ask?
I work in business. I work in the financial world.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's interesting. My projection is that a lot of the people here maybe come from mental health or they're graduate students and so on. But it sounds like you come from a very different place.
Well, I'm interested in those topics. I'm interested in philosophy, psychology, mindfulness.
Great. Are you a mindfulness or a Buddhist practitioner currently?
I just practice mindfulness as a, you know, in a secular way, just on my own. I mean, I don't follow the Buddhist tradition. I just practice it on my own.
Sure, I understand.
I'm a big Mormon.
Anything else you'd like to say?
That's it.
We just heard a talk by Dr. I'm not sure I can say his name, Jinpa. What stands out for you? What struck you?
I thought what he said about the target. When you're too self-absorbed, you create a huge target for self-injury, really, for having your feelings hurt. And the more you look at other people and pay attention to other people, the less likely you are to have your feelings hurt because you're not thinking so much of yourself. I thought that was really interesting.
Yes, that was a point that stood out for me as well. I appreciate your bringing it back to my mind. Hey, nice meeting you.
Nice to talk to you.
Okay, I have the pleasure of talking to Sayaka Matsumoto, did I say
yes,
it right?
That's right?
Who is on the U.S. Olympic judo team, and you just gave a wonderful presentation here at the Happiness Conference, and you talked about two different kinds of happiness. Maybe you could just give a quick recap of those.
The two types of happiness that I talked about were elation, or immediate gratification, and also enduring happiness. And elation is kind of the feeling that the euphoria you feel right after you win a match or a big tournament, but it usually wears off. And the enduring happiness are the relationships and bonds you form with family, teammates, your coaches, and people you meet through the sport that you do. That lasts a lot longer than the immediate, you know, instant euphoria you feel after you win a match.
Right. And, you know, one thing that you didn't touch on, and this conference is sponsored by a Buddhist organization, and I know when I studied judo years and years ago, it seemed like there was a fair amount of the Buddhist philosophy that, you know, that judo was based on.
Yeah.
Has that played a role in your study and development?
I think it was really interesting listening to that last presentation with the Venerable Robina, and talking about humility and having self-confidence, but remaining humble, kind of that kind of Buddhist philosophy. I'm personally not Buddhist, but a lot of the philosophies that judo was founded on are similar to those that can be found in Buddhism about, you know, having compassion for others, not thinking about just yourself, being humble, and those kinds of traits. So I think there are some overlapping concepts between the two of them.
Right. Did you get to meet some of the high-profile athletes at the Olympics? Did you get to meet Michael Phelps or any of those folks?
I met Michael Phelps and Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and my roommate was actually a diver, Laurel Wilkinson. She won gold in Sydney. But I saw all the famous athletes kind of, you know, around the village. And
sure.
Everybody just kept to themselves, really. We didn't want to bother anybody with autographs. I did see Michael Phelps and, you know, a lot of the high-profile stars, the gymnastics.
What was it like for you? What did you feel like when you were walking? You know, they do that athletes walk around there in Beijing. Yeah, the opening ceremony.
it's kind of really hard to describe what it was like. It was just really overwhelming and kind of a culmination of all my work in that moment, walking out into that, you know, Bird's Nest Olympic Stadium and just seeing 91,000 people screaming for you. It was just, I mean, it was something that I had dreamed about and hoped to one day get there, and it actually came true. It was pretty surreal.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking time to talk to me. Bye.
Thank you.
Hi, why don't you tell us your name?
My name is Chet Carey.
And Chet, what brings you to the Happiness Conference?
I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but the title itself pretty much summarizes it, Happiness and its Causes. To understand the very basic themes that contribute to our own happiness and what we can do to modulate our lives to optimize matters and to seek true happiness, which to me sounds like it's the pursuit of compassion more than anything else, and a regard for others is the source of true happiness, is the big overwhelming overarching theme of the 2 days I've been here.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is the theme that's come out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you a Buddhist practitioner ordinarily?
No, I am more of a Quaker heritage. Quakers are, by and large, contemplative in their very simplistic religion, pacifists by nature, and I'd like to think careful and active listeners. So that's what I'm trying to do while I'm here. So there's a bit of a spiritual overlay about why I'm here. But, you know, life is punctuated by lifelong learning, and this is, I thought, would be a tremendous opportunity in one sitting, in one setting, to learn from a variety of experts about what might be one of the most important topics in our lives. It seems to be brushed under the carpet so often, we're never quite sure how to systematically go about trying to achieve happiness.
Yeah, the speakers here keep emphasizing that Buddhism is not really a religion in the sense that other religions are religions, that at least the way it's being presented here, it's very practical, and it involves a set of techniques for being with one's mind or exploring one's mind. So I gather that you don't find it in any way incompatible with your Quaker faith?
Precisely. I think, for example, Robina Curtin speaks with great clarity. There is a spiritual overlay to what she's talking about, but she's trying to show the practical dimension and aspects to Buddhism and how it can be used in everyday life, and that we do have the ability to control our own emotions just by being introspective, finding a calm pinpoint in our minds and using that as the springboard for emotional regulation, and then from then we can expand on to be more enlightened. And I think it's a very practical, what I hear from her is just news you can use.
Yes, so. And for our listeners, what's the honorific, the venerable?
The venerable, exactly.
Robina Curtin is a Buddhist nun.
Right.
Now, I'm not aware, would all of the Buddhist nuns be referred to as venerable, or has she achieved a certain status that she has earned that title?
I'm really not quite sure, other than I believe there are one or two other Buddhist nuns here that have the the prefix V-E-N, period. So
yes.
I'm assuming it may be the same as sister in the Catholic religion, or it's a term of respect.
That's what I was wondering. May I ask what you do for a living or in your day-to-day life?
I'm just a personal investor and spend my time investing and trying to improve my life.
How have you fared during this recent economic crisis?
Well, mostly just through copious amounts of reading. I took about half my money out of the market about 14 or 15 months ago, and I'm only about 20% exposed to the market.
Oh,
so.
good for you.
Yeah. More luck than smarts, I can assure you.
What would be your advice, your psychological advice, spiritual advice for people during these, what look like are going to be pretty trying economic times?
goodness, that's very difficult to tell. I think for everybody, to the extent they possibly can, to do the homework they need to do on the stocks and bonds that they currently hold, what their true financial condition is, not to overextend themselves with regard to liabilities or to loans, to show good common sense with regard to personal financial planning, and understand that we're probably closer to the bottom than we are to the top.
Yeah.
And just some good-natured patience will pay off in another 10 years, I think.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Beth, and I don't know your last name.
Phelan.
Okay, Beth Phelan, who was... we were in a workshop with Philippe Golden, and it was both cognitive and experiential, and so Beth and I, we cooperated in an exercise of looking at each other for an extended period of time, and that, you know, the window being the eyes being the window to the soul, that's what I meant to say, we really bonded.
That's and, right. David's my new old friend.
Yeah. And I found out that, in fact, you've been responsible for putting on this kind of conference in several other corners of the world. So say a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, the conferences are called Happiness and Its Causes. And the first one was held in Sydney two and a half years ago. And out of that... the conference has spread. We were very lucky in our second conference to have His Holiness the Dalai Lama come, and the conference grew from about 600 people to over 3,500 people for that event.
Wow, my goodness.
People have loved the conference so much, it really makes a difference in people's lives. It's looking at happiness from many different perspectives, science, philosophy, psychology, economics, business, the arts, just across the spectrum. And so there's something there for everyone. It's about practical tools and techniques, not just about theory, but there is the theory there as well.
I was really impressed by this one, by the caliber of presenters. There wasn't a bad presenter in the bunch, and we probably saw 20 or so.
Absolutely. The people who speak at our conferences have got a high level of expertise, and they're also really great at getting it across to people. I love the mix of, you know, having the scientists there that can present the statistics and talk about the research that's being done and show us models of the brain with all different little bits coloured in.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily get all that.
Right.
But then I like it when it comes down to the personal stories as well, like Andre yesterday talking about how he was able to forgive the person who murdered his son.
Yes.
And just such a spontaneous, warm, loving person. Just so incredible, showing that what is possible if you put some of these techniques into practice, into your life.
Yes. Mm. Now, how did you come to be involved in such a pivotal role in these conferences?
Ah, well, it was lucky, I guess. I mean, it just kind of evolved. I was working for a Buddhist centre in Sydney. The director of that centre was the person who had the idea for us to do these conferences. His working role is he owns an international conference company, but he works as a volunteer, in a volunteer capacity as the director of our centre. So he thought, why not do that? And I, first of all, was doing the marketing for the conferences, and then for the conference that His Holiness spoke at, I had the wonderful job of putting the program together, getting the speakers to come in. So it's just kind of, basically I just said, I can do that, and then I was given the opportunity to show that I could do that, and I think I've got the best job in the world.
Now, were you a Buddhist before this or after?
Before, actually.
You were, yes.
Yeah, I came to Buddhism after a relationship I was in ended, and a friend who wasn't even a Buddhist said, oh, why don't try the Buddhist Centre, because I was just shattered.
Oh, yeah.
And I went there, and the monk was talking about how you could look at the person who'd harmed you the most as the most precious treasure, because based on them you could really develop qualities of true compassion and love. And I'm pleased to say it worked, and I'm still friends with my ex.
All right, good for you. Well, I know you've got to go pack and get out of your hotel room here, so thanks so much for being willing to talk to me.
It was a great pleasure, David, and I hope we stay in contact, and I would love to see you in Sydney at one of our conferences there, or London, or Singapore, or back here
in San Francisco. I'd love to be at any and all of those places, and thank you for that invitation.
Okay.
Okay, tell us your name.
My name is Michelle Stewart.
And Michelle, I understand that you had played some pivotal key role in terms of creating this wonderful conference. Tell us about that.
Well, I heard about the conference from Ravina Corton. She was a speaker at one of Tony Steele and Beth Phelan's conferences in Sydney, Australia. And she told me about it, since she's a teacher at my center, Sei Chin Ling. She said, why don't you come to Sydney and see it with me?
Now tell us, what is that center?
It's my center?
Yeah.
It's called Sei Chin Ling Buddhist Center and Book Cafe.
It's a Buddhist center?
It's a Tibetan Buddhist center in San Francisco.
And what happens there?
We have workshops and classes 7 days a week, as well as a bookstore and a book cafe.
Oh, okay.
So, and teachers, we have classes every day, all day long.
Okay, great. Yeah. And you're one of the co-sponsors, then, of this event.
So Sei Chin Ling and Rabina's organization, Liberation Prison Project, we came in together on this conference. So we also share buildings, so we have mutual relationship as well as mutual employees. So it was very beneficial.
Oh, excellent.
For both of us to do it together.
Yeah.
So she invited me to Sydney, you know, to her old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
She's an Aussie. And I stayed in Sydney for about a week, and I went to the Happiness and Its Causes conference with His Holiness the Dalai Lama in 2007. And after that, the organizers from Sydney came to San Francisco, and we just started the process. So we had, week-long meetings, me and them, originally. Rabina wasn't even there. She was out of town. And we've basically just been doing it together ever since. One of my main roles has been the finances of it.
Okay.
I manage all the money.
Not the fun part.
I do all the money. I do all of the logistics, handle everything like schedules, all that kind of stuff. But
do you think the event will happen again next year here in San Francisco?
No question.
Great.
Most definitely. And there's another conference that we're thinking of having as well. It's another conference that Tony Steele created called Mind and Its Potential, and it's the same kind of thing, but more along with mind and science and not happiness. So that also we might do in 2009, possibly 2010, but Happiness and Its Causes will definitely be something we do every single year.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And do you feel that the conference has been successful?
Absolutely. I feel like, Sei Chin Ling started out in someone's living room. So we were a little center 14 years ago, and in the last 4 years, we've really, really grown. We're in a three-story Victorian, and it's all building up to this conference, and Sei Chin Ling really has just gotten to another level so that we can do our work and we can benefit more human beings. We just are trying to spread what we know that helps people, which is the teachings of the Buddha.
Which I was just going to ask you, what gives you happiness?
What gives me happiness? Serving others.
Yeah.
It sounds so cliched, I know, but it's really true. When you stop thinking about your own problems, you can really just start to help others. And bringing even someone a cup of tea, you know, brightens someone's day, and that brightens yours. So,
thank you so much for talking to me.
Okay. Absolutely, anytime.
Great. So I'm with the Venerable Rabina Corton, who is the spark plug, the driving force of this conference. What would you like my listeners to know?
Well, we had this conference, Happiness and Its Causes, and sounds kind of cute, but I think it's kind of a sort of profound meaning. I think if we think even twice about it, everybody wants that. And I think it's really good to really look at it and open it up and deconstruct it and question what we think it is and what we think the causes are. And then finally, for me, I think to take away from this is this seemingly simple idea, but again, kind of profound, that actually we can have some control over it, that actually we can, by changing ourselves, by changing our minds and our approaches and our outlooks, we actually can bring it, you know, to ourselves and others. I'm very convinced about that.
Yes, yes. And you're a Buddhist nun.
I am.
How long have you been a Buddhist nun?
Quite a while. 30 plus years.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
About as long as I was a professor.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And I, you have an honorific title, Venerable.
Oh, that's just a term they use in Buddhism. It's sort of like reverend, you know.
Do they use that for all Buddhist nuns? Or
I think monks and nuns is a generalized sort of phrase that they use. I think it's come from the Chinese one. They use a term like that.
I've just been so curious about that the whole time.
No, really. I think it's similar to reverend.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for making it possible for me to attend.
Happy
and
to have
to,
you.
And to meet so many of these wonderful people and to get to talk to some of them.
Fantastic.
And I'm going to share it with my listeners. This will be on the internet.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next year.
See Next
you then.
Year.
Absolutely.
Great.
I hope you enjoyed these short interviews from the floor of the Happiness Conference and that the background buzz wasn't too distracting and overwhelming. The conference was all the more colorful for the Buddhist monks and Buddhist nuns who were in attendance with their shaved heads and saffron robes. One of these was the last interview you just heard with the Venerable Robina Korten. As you heard, Robina was perhaps the person most responsible for setting up the conference. A Buddhist nun, she defies whatever stereotypes you might have about either Buddhism or nuns. She's quite a character. She's maybe about 5 feet tall, but has the commanding presence of a no-holds-barred, take-no-prisoners drill sergeant. And she's quite open about the fact that in her younger days, she was a hippie and then a communist and then an anarchist and a feminist and probably more of an even wilder nature, but I might be making that last part up. In the end, Buddhism was the only thing that made sense to her. And all of that earlier political activism is now channeled into her prison work with the Liberation Project, which she founded and heads, as well as these conferences, and also in her powerfully logical approach to teaching Buddhism. She's by turns tough and gentle and a powerful example. Another standout personality among many at the conference was Dr. Thupten Jinpa, and I hope I'm saying his name right. I'm not sure. He's a modest, quiet-speaking, diminutive Tibetan who entered a Tibetan monastery as a young boy, graduate from the highest program of the monastic university in Tibet, and from there to earn a PhD in religious studies from Cambridge, and for 24 years was the principal translator for the Dalai Lama. He now directs an Asian Studies Institute in Montreal, Canada, and is a visiting scholar at Stanford's University Neuroscience Institute's Project Compassion. Despite his shy demeanor, he was called to the podium a number of times, not only for his own presentations, but to fill in for others who could not attend. And each time he was greeted with applause, clearly all of us in the audience felt great affection for him. Just think of the life he's had, going from a boy in Tibet, living the monastic life, and then on to Cambridge, and now in Canada and the U.S., a professor, a husband, and a father. He has seen and gone through amazing changes in his life. And then, of course, he's had a long and close relationship with the Dalai Lama and has wonderful stories to tell about his observations up close and personal. I didn't attempt to interview him at the conference, but I did get his card and plan to do a full interview with him at some point. Something for us all to look forward to.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. Dr. Davis here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring our spirit and our psyche, we are learning to unwind. shrink wrap radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. We're all in your mind. We're all in your mind.
I have a new interview up on my other podcast at wisecounselpodcast.com. It's with Annie Fahey, MSW, on motivational interviewing. This is an approach which evidently has become increasingly important, especially among those dealing with substance abuse. We heard it referred to in an earlier interview with Dr. Alan Marlatt, as well as one I did with Dr. Pat Denning. This latest interview with Annie Fahey was educational for me and probably will be for most of you as well. Let me remind you again that I have a short promo video under the promos tab at shrinkwrapradio.com. Let me remind you again that I have a short promo video under the promos tab at shrinkwrapradio.com. And I would like to encourage you to grab it and put it on your blog, MySpace, or Facebook page to help get the word out. I continue to feel that this content deserves a much wider audience. There are also flyers under that promos tab that you can print out and post on any appropriate places where people put up flyers. I'm really happy to report that the Shrink Wrap Radio logo has been featured on the higher education page of iTunes for months and months, and currently we are ranked as number 17 among higher education podcasts. Our ranking there seems to go up and down, with us sometimes dropping off the list of the top 25 altogether, but the logo continues to be featured even when we drop off the top 25. Somebody at Apple must love Shrink Wrap Radio, and I'm grateful for that. Now, speaking of gratitude, I'm very grateful to those listeners who are supporting us with their donations. I'm happy to report we've received a few more since the last podcast. This episode is all about happiness and its causes. As I said earlier, generosity and gratitude are two very important components of happiness. So you be generous, and I'll be grateful, and we'll both be happy. There's a very prominent donate button at shrinkwrapradio.com, and that takes you to a secure PayPal page where there are several donation options, including the option of using a credit card. While your cash donations are greatly appreciated, I'm also grateful for all the other forms of support you offer, including your emails, the comments you post, the voice messages you leave, the volunteer transcriptions, the way you help to spread the word, and of course the fact that you listen at all. And I should also hasten to add, those of you who have advertised on our Top Spots widget, as well as those who've taken advantage of the discounts on our website from GoDaddy, Budget, Brookstone, and PetMeds.com, those discount codes are still there, and they also help to support the show. For all of these contributions, I am very grateful indeed.
So this is San Francisco, and it's a conference for happiness and its causes, and I'm on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Hey, Phil, thanks for that transition. Phil is one of my best friends and a retired counselor from Sonoma State University. He was able to get into the happiness conference as a volunteer, and so we were able to have lunch together and hang out after some of the sessions. I've proposed getting him on mic for an interview, but he's shy about that. Now let's catch up on some email from our listener community. The first one is a follow-up from a previous exchange with Dione in Boston, who suggested I review someone about Lacan, the French psychoanalyst, and that approach to psychoanalysis. And Dione writes, "Hi, David. Thanks for your reply, and you're welcome for the link. You're right. 99% of what's out there on Lacan's thought is impossible to understand, starting with his own writings and seminars. But if you can get your hands on Bruce Fink's A Clinical Introduction to Lacanian Psychoanalysis, it should be available on Amazon, I think you might catch the Lacan bug from page one. It's incredibly well written and just teeming with aha moments that I feel you'll appreciate. For potential interviews, I thought of that institute near you, and this might seem rather silly, I don't know, because being in California, where ideas seem to go around rather freely, I thought you'd be less likely to encounter any potential intellectual snobbiness that might come with the Lacanian territory. Let me know how it goes. Greetings from Boston, Dione. Well, Dione, that seemed like such a good suggestion that I did contact that institute in Berkeley, and I have one Raul Moncayo, who has written a book about Lacan, the Lacanian approach to psychoanalysis. And I'm going to be interviewing him in the day before Christmas, actually, for Wise Counsel. It seemed to me that he would be particularly appropriate for that podcast series. And I'll try to contact the guy that you mentioned here, Bruce Fink. I'll see if I can track him down, maybe get him to send me a copy of that book, and perhaps line him up for an interview down the line as well. Great suggestion. Now moving along, John writes to say, I just listened to the podcast where you read a listener email about boominess and distortion problems with the audio, and I just wanted to let you know that I've never heard a problem with that. I listened to the podcast on my iPod Touch through earbuds for what it's worth. Well, thanks for that feedback. That does help to set my mind at rest. I can't hear the problem. Nobody else has written to me about the problem. Your feedback, along with some other that I'll read in a moment, seems to suggest that it may be something unique to the other listener's setup or something. Now, longtime listener and champion transcriber Joe in Australia writes, Hi, David. Number 183, Mindfulness, Harm Reduction, and Relapse Prevention with Alan Marlatt was another great episode. Thank you so much once again. I was listening to you read the question from your listener asking about a website on imagination and better visualization. I can't pinpoint the episode he refers to, but I do have a suggestion for him for a website that is likely to help. And then she gives the URL as www.brainrules.net. That's BRAINRULES.net. And she goes on to say, in keeping with the spirit of the inquiry, I can't recall how I found this website, but I do know it was via a podcast interview, not your podcast, sorry about that, and it is rich with engaging practical information. Cheers from Joe. So I thought I'd pass that along because other people might be interested in enhancing their visualization and imagination. I know I could use some enhancement in that department myself. I believe the original inquiry came from someone in Germany. I don't recall the name off the top of my head, but I hope you're still out there listening and were able to get that information. And going on to the next one, which is from Rachel, she writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. Loved your interview with Pat Denning on harm reduction. Thank you for giving time to this important area of substance abuse. I'm very passionate about harm reduction and have seen it to be incredibly effective where more coercive models have failed. As I work with the most disenfranchised folks, homeless of Los Angeles, I really appreciate the harm reduction basic assumption that everyone is worth treating. Anyway, I would be interested in your feedback and ideas about this orientation as well as the interview. Thanks. And that's from Rachel Spencer, MFT, who also is one of the people who bought Top Spot's widget ad on our website. And I believe it was also Rachel who suggested that I interview Pat Denning, and that interview is on the Wise Counsel podcast series. And, of course, I'm very enthusiastic about the approach. I really didn't know about the approach until you brought it up to me, Rachel. So that's how I get to learn from doing Shrink Wrap Radio. It's as beneficial to me as I hope it is to the rest of you. I liked what she had to say, and I thought that the interview went quite well. It was fun interviewing her and very informative. Moving along, longtime listener Rick V sent me a really cool video that he shot with a cell phone of two guys playing didgeridoo in a local park. Thanks for that, Rick. Wish I could share it with the rest of you. Rick was recalling that I had mentioned here some time back that I was trying to learn to play the didgeridoo. I have one. I've made some progress, but I don't play it very often because I don't have anybody to play with. I don't know anybody else who's into that kind of thing. Did get the circular breathing down pretty well, but there's still lots of room for improvement. Now, here's one last one from longtime listener Ken Valerio. He's written many times before. He's an artist living in New York City. And previous times I've put a link to his art gallery on his website. I don't have that handy right now. But he writes, "Hey, Dr. Dave, firstly, I wanted to say that show 180 on emerging technology, I think that was the one with Nova Spivak." Ken says, "Firstly, I want to say that show 180 on emerging technology was my favorite show so far. I'm almost done reading Kurzweil's The Singularity is Near, and I'm born again. Ha ha. I'm totally convinced by most of his arguments and have already begun bracing myself for all the accelerated changes that are coming. It's kind of made me feel like a kid again, newly enthusiastic about learning, shedding the feeling that my worldview was solid. Your guest was wonderful and was convincing about his criticisms of Kurzweil's predictions. I have no idea who is right, but I will say I'm thrilled to be alive in all this. If you could get Kurzweil on your show, that would be wonderful. You know, I've thought about trying to get hold of him. He's kind of in that upper firmament. I don't know if he would be responsive or not. I could try writing Nova Spivak to see if he would be willing to pass along an invitation to Kurzweil. Maybe that's the best way to approach it." And Ken goes on to say, "Also, I love the show on happiness research as well. That's good because you're going to be getting a bunch more of it here." He goes on to say, "I've worked really hard to become a happy person, and I've come to value very pragmatic approaches to changing the mental experience through experimental action. Great stuff, Dr. Dave." Hey, Ken and everybody else, there was an article in the paper just this morning about a study coming out of the UK, and also one of the collaborators was a Harvard sociologist, and it was a long-term study with lots of subjects, and what they found was that if you have friends who are happy, or nurses who are happy, or spouses who are happy, they all impact our happiness. I was just listening back to this, and I heard myself say, "nurses who are happy." I meant to say, "neighbors who are happy." The more happy people you know, the happier you're likely to be. So keep that in mind. And then Ken goes on to say, "I mostly wanted to write to you concerning one of your emails. I wanted you to know," and he goes on to comment about the email from the fellow who complained about the sound quality, and to say that that he doesn't hear any problems with it either. So Ken wraps it up. "That's all from me. Have a very happy Turkey Day, my favorite holiday of the year, Ken." And yes, I had a very nice kind of family, low-key family Thanksgiving. We went to my daughter's house, and she and her husband and two kids, and lots of in-laws there, and we had a nice Thanksgiving. So I think that better wrap it up for today. Remember to send me your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can send MP3 files as an attachment. I love to get voice comments. Or you can leave them on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod. You can use the MyChingo button if you've got a mic. And you can use our phone, 206-337-0622. Thanks to all of those at the Happiness and Its Causes Conference in San Francisco who allowed me to record them, as well as the organizers who allowed me to attend. And next week's guest will be Dr. Kathy Greenberg, talking about what happy women know. You'll want to hear that. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.